The ethics of vaccine development and distribution. The worldwide movement to develop, make, and distribute vaccines has been faster and more far-reaching than any vaccination effort in history. But with the push to have quick results that reach as many people as possible, certain choices had to be made. What counts as adequate research? How do you test vaccines? What countries get which vaccine? And the question that everyone is talking about, how do you prioritize who gets the shots first? I'm Cindy Hahn. Today, we will explore the ethical questions that come with vaccinating people on this massive scale. And we'll discuss the many vaccine-related issues that are tied to the morals and values of our society. Name calling is next, but first, this news update. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Vaccines are at the top of mind for most people these days. When will more be available? Who will get them first? And how effective are they? Today, we'll discuss how our society's values and ethics are reflected in how we view vaccines. My guests are Jessica Miller, she's a clinical ethicist and professor of philosophy at the University of Maine, and Dr. James Jarvis, he's physician leader for Incident Command at Northern Light Health and director of clinical education for Northern Light and Eastern Maine Medical Center. We invite your comments and questions. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Jessica and Jim, thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Jessica Miller, you're a clinical ethicist, and the question of who gets the vaccine first is a big one right now. Here in Maine, we put the healthcare workers and the frontline workers and oldest Mainers first, but can you explain how these kinds of prioritizations come to be and what the measure is for who comes first?
Sure. Yes. So as an ethicist, I have a background in philosophy, and we tend to think about different principles, ethical principles and values that can underlie our practical policy decisions. And so when Governor Mills puts out the phases, she is taking advice from the Maine DHHS and the Maine CDC, who is taking some advice from the national CDC. And there's actually an advisory committee on immunization practices nationally that, you know, these are people that get together. They're from all different backgrounds, bioethicists, specialists, epidemiologists, researchers, et cetera. And, you know, try to come up with a framework. And there is a four-principle framework that they have come up with. And it begins with maximizing benefits and minimizing harms. It's as simple as that. Allocating the vaccine should help individual recipients and the population overall. And that includes, you know, reducing SARS-CoV-2 infections and COVID-19-associated morbidity and mortality, which would reduce the burden on our healthcare capacity and facilities. So that's why we look at the groups that are at the highest risk of infection, of disease, hospitalization, and death. The second principle is promoting justice. So here's where we look at our obligation to protect and advance equal opportunity for everyone that can hopefully they can enjoy their the most health they can enjoy and well-being. And we focus here on the fundamental value and dignity of all people. So this is where we look at, is our allocation plan fair and equitable for all age groups? Then third, we look at mitigating health inequities. So health equity is something we have when everyone has the opportunity to attain their full health potential, and no one is disadvantaged from that because of their social position or their socially determined circumstances. So here's where we look at whether our plan identifies and addresses the barriers to vaccination among groups who are disproportionately affected by COVID-19 or who face health inequities resulting from the social determinants of health. Those are the things that affect our health that are not health care. Our you know, economic status, our social status, geographic status, et cetera. And the fourth principle is promoting transparency. And that is being open about the decision-making process. And that's why I mentioned what I did at the beginning about the guidelines promulgated at the national level and then shared with the main organizations and then shared by the governor, which is all sort of available on different websites. Promoting transparency helps us understand the decision-making process, and it's really important to build trust. We really need to have a strong trust in the process in order for this massive vaccination rollout, which is unprecedented in its scale globally, to be effective. So that's where we look at, have we had diverse input and public engagement in the allocation plan? Have we made our evidence publicly available? Are we clear about what we do know and don't know? So those four values, minimizing harm, maximizing benefits, promoting justice, mitigating health inequities, and promoting transparency, are the four values that translate to the phased plan that we have. And you will see this mimicked in comments from Governor Mills and Dr. Shaw when they say Maine's priorities are saving lives. That's the first one, maximize benefits and minimize harms. And then second, protect those directly engaged in the fight against COVID-19, ensure, you know, that our emergency response is intact and that our COVID-19 response infrastructure is intact. That's all about that maximizing benefits and minimizing harms.
Okay, so it sounds like it's sort of a combination of fairness and ethics as well as practicality in that whole framework. Dr. Jarvis, you're in charge of vaccine distribution among Northern Lights' many hospitals. I know that your vaccine allocation is limited by the doses your system is receiving, which is a problem everywhere. But that aside, you're supposed to adhere to these CDC guidelines for how to allocate the vaccines. And are there any ways that you feel that that prioritization can ever be unfair or that there's a gray area to following that?
That's a great question, Cindy. And so, of course, there's always going to be that issue around fairness. And what we don't want to do is get into a situation where somebody's sitting there saying, well, I'm sicker than you are, so I deserve more than what you're getting. And that's really what the priorities that we've set in place here in Maine really looked at. And as Jessica said, looking at where our best strategies are to protect the most vulnerable in the fastest amount of time is really how our strategy has worked so far. So our age-based strategy, meaning that right now we're vaccinating those people over the age of 70, makes a lot of sense for our state. Because if you look at that particular demographic, they are at the highest risk of death if they were to contract COVID-19, regardless of any other health conditions that we're talking about. And in fact, if we actually look at the chances of dying from COVID-19 infection, age over 45 is actually a more of a risk for dying than any other of the conditions that we talk about when we talk about people with cancer or diabetes or heart disease. And so really, this is a strategy that protects the most vulnerable, and it's one that makes it easy for us to distribute the vaccine when it's of limited supply. If we had an infinite supply of vaccine and an infinite number of people who were able to vaccinate individuals, then we wouldn't be having the discussions that we have right now because we'd be able to take care of everybody. But that's not the case. We're limited both in terms of supply and the resource it takes to distribute that supply. And so as we continue to look at that focus, the governor made the decision that age over 70 was the single greatest risk factor for death, and so trying to protect those individuals was important. And that's when we talk about population health. When we talk about population health, we have to look at large groups of people and how we can protect the majority of them, versus patient health, where we look at the individual. And that's often hard for all of us to do, and certainly for clinicians that's hard to do because we interact with our patients on a regular basis, so we know them personally. We have a personal bond with them, much like people have within their own family. But we have to take that step back when we're talking about a limited resource, and that's what we're dealing with right now. And then we have to look at where we can do the greatest good in the shortest amount of time.
So the way that vaccines are allocated does reflect something about our ethical values in that we're looking to save lives first. So there's an assumption that vulnerable people or older people take priority. But just devil's advocate question, say a 55-year-old healthy man who's working says, well, I'm a more productive member of society than an 80-year-old, so why shouldn't I be first? Does there automatically a value of of productivity isn't quite as high as the life-saving element?
Well, it depends on what it is that you're trying to accomplish. So in our case right now in the state of Maine, we are hampered by the amount of hospital beds that we have and the resources, both in terms of personnel, doctors, nurses, support staff, and medical supplies. That's a fact of life in Maine every day, regardless of the pandemic, but certainly magnified by the pandemic. So that's one of the reasons why initially one of the first groups that we were protecting were healthcare workers, because we needed them. We needed every single one of them, because we are short those critical resources of personnel on an everyday basis. So we couldn't go any further below that. If we take a look at your individual 55-year-old who's healthy, if they were to get COVID-19, they probably are not going to tax the resources of the healthcare system as much as somebody who's over the age of 70. Therefore, we're actually protecting that 55-year-old, because that 55-year-old is still at risk of having a heart attack or being in a car accident and needing to have that hospital bed available that might be taken up by somebody over the age of 70 who is much more likely to need it if they were infected with COVID-19. So again, it's that broader picture. It's always taking that one step back and looking at who else does this decision affect. So why did we do first responders and healthcare workers? Because we needed them initially. Why are we looking at people over age 70? Because they will actually probably take up more resources than those who are healthier if they were to be infected with COVID-19. Is that a balance? Absolutely. But it's one that we have to make because of the limited supply.
Okay, so the broad public health view is what you're talking about. We have now calling in Maine Attorney General Aaron Frey. Thanks for joining us today, Aaron.
Cindy, thanks for having me.
So you just made a statement regarding the healthcare providers giving vaccinations to ineligible people. Can you explain what it is you're saying needs to be done or not be done in Maine?
Sure. So you know, vaccine, as has already been discussed on this call, this vaccine is life-saving, it's life-changing, and with this limited supply, there is a lot of anxiety by populations who are vulnerable, who are trying to access this vaccine, and the public has placed its trust in providers to ensure that this vaccine is distributed as appropriately as possible, given the limited supply and, you know, some of the other challenges that Maine faces. Providers receive this vaccine free of charge, and they enter into agreements that have certain requirements that they'll follow the federal vaccine program, state CDC guidelines, and of course these agreements involve these providers agreeing that they will comply. And so we had been receiving information in the office about, you know, some of the times where providers were perhaps not adhering to the priority schedule that had been set forward. Of course, there was also some public reporting in which some providers had acknowledged that they made some decisions about the distribution of this, you know, very valuable limited resource to folks that really didn't fit into the priority system that had been agreed to. And so that prompted the advisory that you refer to, Cindy. You know, the purpose of this advisory was really to make sure to remind folks, providers, of the agreement that they entered into, remind folks that the public has placed a trust that any ambiguities are going to be resolved in ensuring that the most vulnerable populations are receiving this life-saving, life-changing vaccine. And it provides that reset so that in the future, there really, not that there should have been before, but there won't be any reason that a provider or a member of the public could think that there wasn't notice given that we're paying attention. Really importantly, though, I also want to stress that this wasn't meant to be a negative. There's some hard work going on out there. I appreciate that there's already been some discussion about the hard work that's been involved by providers doing the right thing and trying to make sure that people are getting this life-saving, life-changing vaccine. And so, you know, with that, thanks. It's just a reminder that, you know, these priorities are set. Any ambiguities need to be resolved in favor of those vulnerable populations. And we're going to be paying attention so that providers and the public have confidence that we're going to be doing this right.
And what would you do? What would the state do to sanction the providers who do go against this advisory?
Well, of course, my hope is that we don't get to that point, right? I mean, the whole point of this advisory was to remind people, we have heard some acknowledgement by some providers that they could have made some different decisions about how they did this. The, you know, of course, the most draconian or the most extreme sanction here would be not providing this vaccine for free to the provider who's not following the program. I don't think we're going to get to that point. I mean, really, the focus here is to make sure that there's education for providers and the public. Certainly, it would be to the extent that a provider was just not willing to follow the agreement that they entered into, there'd be an escalating effort to, you know, make sure they're educated on what their responsibilities are. But again, of course, there's that option of not providing the vaccine. I don't think we're going to get to that point, Cindy. I really don't. I think that now that the public is aware of this, I think now that providers are clearly on notice that we are paying attention to this, providers want to do the right thing. They are doing the right thing most of the time. So I think that this hopefully will clear up some of this ambiguity.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for calling in. That was Maine's Attorney General, Aaron Fry. And Jessica, I wanted to follow up with a question. This is happening quite a bit in the news where we hear about cases of medical professionals who have leftover doses of the vaccine. And so they, rather than let the doses go to waste, they find somebody to give them to. So then sometimes that causes pushback where people say, well, the ones who got it don't deserve to get the vaccine ahead of their turn. So this is happening in Maine. This is happening all over the country. What's your take on this kind of scenario?
Well, this is definitely a tougher one than sort of a premeditated letting people jump the line, which is clearly unethical. And I'm glad that, you know, statements are being made in the state about that. I think that in this case that you mentioned, there is a choice between discarding usable vaccine and vaccinating a person who needs to be vaccinated. So I think that is a much grayer area and a much tougher choice. On the pro side, obviously, we don't want this scarce public good to go to waste. We don't want to have somebody not vaccinated when they could be vaccinated because we want to minimize harm and contain the spread of the disease. On the negative side of doing that, who's going to sort of be around, right? Is it going to be fair? Who's around ready to get the vaccine that when you've got these extra jabs to give? So you could be replicating some inequity. So ethicists are kind of divided on this, but the preponderance of my colleagues, and I would agree, think that it's better to use a usable vaccine where we do have these stringent storage conditions and stringent use, you know, cases than to let it go to waste.
Dr. Jarvis, can you weigh in on that as well, as far as if somebody has to use up those extra doses, are there sort of best ways to try to do that?
Yeah, and that becomes a very technical issue for us. So I'll just say that at Northern Light Health, we have literally gotten this down to a point where at the end of our clinics, we are drawing up doses as the last few people scheduled for appointments are coming in. But because of the way this particular vaccine, both the Pfizer and the Moderna, are issued to us, they're in what we call multi-use vials, meaning that we draw up multiple syringes out of the same vial, and often we can get an extra dose out of the Pfizer and sometimes two or more extra doses out of the Moderna vial. So that leads us to always have a little bit more vaccine than what we had anticipated at the end of the day. But because we're so precise, we literally wind up having just a few doses at hand at the end of the day. So yesterday we administered about 1,000 doses at the Cross Insurance Center here in Bangor, and we only had a handful of doses remaining at the end. What our process has been is that if we have people who are volunteering their time to assist us at these clinics, they are covered under the healthcare worker scenario that the governor's office and the Maine CDC have set up for us. And so we often use that vaccine for those individuals. We try to prioritize individuals who are over the age of 70 first, keeping in line with that, and then move down. But that is a very small amount of vaccine. And so we're not talking about, you know, tens of doses or hundreds of doses. We're literally talking about just a few doses at the end of a clinic that might be available. A clinic the other day, we literally had one dose left over. That is it, just one. And so, again, we're not having that. What we don't want to see is people standing outside the clinic hopeful that there'll be vaccine left over, because there probably will not be vaccine left over. That just causes more confusion for individuals. And as Jessica says, then that becomes that conversation. Why did that person get ahead of me in line? So we really do try to stay within the guidelines of either vaccinating people over the age of 70 or individuals who are healthcare workers or first responders.
Okay, interesting. Well, it's time to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Eastern Basements, a division of Maine-owned Eastern Mold Remediation, offering crawl space repairs and waterproofing. EasternBasements.com.
On the next Fresh Air, the hidden costs of racism for everybody. We speak with Heather McGee, former president of the progressive think tank Demos. She says racial discrimination in housing, employment, and voting rights in America has harmed white people as well as African Americans. She's written a new book called The Sum of Us. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 8 p.m. here on Maine Public Radio. Thank you to Pam from Damariscotta for donating your 2002 Acura RSX to Maine Public. Do you have a car whose model name is a jumble of letters that translates into super cool wheels? Well, please consider donating it to Maine Public. It's easy and there's no cost to you. Visit mainepublic.org for all the details. Donated cars identified by random numbers in the alphabet make it possible for us to do more here at your public radio station.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. We are talking about the ethical questions involved with vaccine allocation and research. Joining me, Dr. Jim Jarvis with Northern Light Health. He's the physician leader for Incident Command, and he's director of clinical education. And Jessica Miller, philosophy professor at the University of Maine and a clinical ethicist. Share your comments or questions. Email talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call. The number is 1-800-399-3566. And on the line with us now is Bjorn Hoffman, calling us all the way from Norway, the country, not Norway, Maine. He is a professor at Norwegian University of Science and Technology and adjunct professor at the Center for Medical Ethics at the University of Oslo. His area of specialty is the philosophy of medicine. Thank you so much for calling today, Bjorn.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, wonderful. We are turning to you to get some global perspective on ethical issues in vaccination. And can you first talk about your home country of Norway? How the population is homogenous, people tend to trust authority, perhaps more than in the U.S. So how do Norwegians prioritize who gets vaccinated first?
Well, we've divided in four main groups. The primary goal is to reduce risk of death. So this is giving priority to the frail and also to selected groups of health professionals. And then the second goal is identified to be reducing the risk of serious illness. So this gives priority to the oldest groups in the population. And the third aim then has been identified to maintain essential services, but also critical infrastructure. So that gives priority to persons in key roles with respect to crucial services, but also infrastructure. And the fourth main aim has been to protect employment and economy. We've rolled out about 240,000 vaccines now, which is not a huge amount for a population of about 5 million people.
Well, so it's fairly similar in Norway to what we're doing here in the U.S. But looking at other countries, as an ethicist, what do you see as some of the more difficult issues globally in terms of certain countries having more access to the vaccines than others?
Well, one of the really big challenges has been that we seem to, at least to a pretty large extent, to ignore that the pandemic is a global problem. It affects all of us, and having rich countries using the power to protect their own population, even with many more doses than the population actually needs, is deeply problematic, I think.
Okay, so do you feel that there's any solution to a more fair and ethical system for how vaccines are distributed worldwide?
Well, I think several suggestions have been made. The COVAX, the COVID-19 Vaccines Global Access Facility, has been very, one very important initiative where a lot of countries have contributed so that less affluent countries get access to vaccines quite quickly. Norway has contributed with a certain amount of money, and it's also very gladly to see that quite recently US has also contributed. A more controversial issue is whether the patents rights given by TRIPS should be lifted so that, for instance, India or South Africa could produce vaccines for the populations. That has been much more controversial. But how, quite likely, the COVAX initiative seems quite promising, providing access and distributing access to vaccines to a lot of countries who otherwise would have difficulty in getting access to the vaccines.
Huh. Well, certainly it is a global problem and we need global solutions. Thank you, Bjorn, for joining us. That was Bjorn Hoffman, professor at Norwegian University of Science and Technology and adjunct professor at the Center for Medical Ethics at the University of Oslo. We will go now to a call from, let's see, Laurel. Oops, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to click the, there we go. So Laurel, hi, you're calling from Calais?
Yep.
And what did you want to know?
So my question is, if vaccines are being provided to Maine by the federal government, why are some of the vaccines being given to healthcare providers who only distribute them to their current patients and don't make them available to the general public?
Dr. Jarvis, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, so I can't talk about specifics there. I will say that when we signed a provider agreement to provide vaccine, it is on the behalf of the state of Maine, and therefore for Northern Light Health and the other large health systems in the state, we act as agents of the state of Maine, and therefore we are not holding vaccine for our own patients. There are some health organizations in the state that are getting vaccine directly from the federal government, and they may have different provider agreements than what we have with the state of Maine, and that has to do with federally qualified health centers, the VA, some of our tribal organizations, and so they may have a little bit different rules, but I can't talk to any other specifics beyond what we're doing for Northern Light Health, which is that our vaccine clinics are open to anyone who is a resident of the state of Maine or is declared an essential worker by the governor.
How can I get a list of these other providers? Is that something available online?
So the best way for anybody to find out where they can get both vaccine and whether they qualify for vaccine currently is to actually go to the Maine CDC's website. They actually have on their vaccine website a location where you can click on and it'll show you all of the approved vaccine clinics across the state, and then either we'll have either a link or a phone number that you can call to schedule appointments. All of those sites are done by appointment only, and there's various reasons for that, some of which are operational, and some of them are because of the ethical and equity questions we're talking about today.
Okay. I know about that site. I'm just asking about the places that are not making their vaccines available to the general public.
I do not have any information on that.
Okay.
Okay, we'll try to post information about that site at least on our website and our Facebook page. Thanks for the question, Laurel. And we are now going to Erica Ziller, who is chair of public health at the University of Southern Maine. She specializes in rural health. Thanks for calling, Erica.
Hi, and thank you for having me, Cindy.
Sure. And you are focused on rural populations. So what is it that you find concerning about vaccines and how they're allocated in terms of the rural parts of Maine?
Wonderful question. So as your panelists, Jessica and Jim, have both articulated, there's really a big public health tension between trying to get large groups of people vaccinated as quickly as possible, while also making sure that we're doing it fairly and that we're targeting those at greatest risk. And I would say that on the speed side, there is huge appeal to things like the mass vaccination sites that we're seeing in our more urban locations, like in Scarborough Downs, in Bangor, most recently in Augusta. These are all urban communities, and they provide an opportunity to really get our numbers up. But at the same time, given that our rural Mainers generally are older, they're in poor health, it's absolutely imperative that we make comparable efforts to reach our rural neighbors. Otherwise, we're going to just exacerbate some of those health disparities that Jessica was talking about. And the tricky thing about this is that our public health and healthcare infrastructure is so much more limited in rural Maine. And so we have to develop different strategies that are targeted to those unique community needs.
Okay, so what work is being done in Maine to ensure that these people living in the rural parts of the state have access to vaccines?
Well, I would say that I was incredibly pleased to see that the Maine CDC has explicitly called out rural equity as one of its vaccination priorities and has been working across the state with many rural clinics to try and set them up as vaccination sites, et cetera. But that being said, many of our rural counties are lagging in the per capita vaccination rates compared to what we're seeing in Cumberland County, for example. Arista County might be a successful outlier there, but it's hard to know how much of their success is also because they have an older population. But it does seem like they're doing some great things on the ground in Arista County. And some of the challenges that we're seeing in rural communities in getting to, you know, per capita equity in vaccination, it could be because it's just taking more time to ramp up rural sites, to make them ready to be distributing the vaccine. But some of it is probably related to things like outreach and access. So, for example, I've been reading about some people in urban communities, reading this in social media and other places, recommending to each other that they go to more rural clinics because there are slots available when they log onto the website in the morning to try and find a site. And on the one hand, as Jessica noted, we don't want to waste vaccine, right? We want to make sure that those slots are all getting filled in all the clinics. But I think we really need to work to figure out why rural people are not filling those slots. Is it that they are more hesitant to be vaccinated, which we know across the country is the case for rural residents? Or is it that they're struggling to make their appointments online, to get transportation, and things like broadband access, et cetera, might be coming into play there.
Right. Lots of inequities. And we're going to talk more about that. But thank you so much for giving us a call today. Erica Ziller is chair of public health at the University of Southern Maine. And Jessica, I wanted to follow up with that idea of how do you deal with this dilemma of health inequities with wealthy versus not so wealthy people, those who have access to the knowledge and get on the internet and can drive to wherever they need to go for a vaccine and those who cannot do that. Is there a solution to that? And I know it's happening for sure.
Just like when your caller from Norway, Bjorn mentioned, you know, the global situation, we have a moral obligation, I think, to everyone around the world. This is a global pandemic. But even if you don't buy that, if you don't care that the pandemic will really, you know, disproportionately impact, say, children in poorer nations, you could just go to the practical argument and say the more that the pandemic rages in poorer countries, the more likely new mutations will be spawned, and they might create greater resistance to the vaccines that we currently have, and this will come back on us. I mean, some estimates are that $4.5 trillion of economic activity, you know, would be lost if we weren't using COVAX, the global facility, to fairly distribute vaccines, so that the rich countries can't just make these bilateral agreements. So I'm very supportive of that on moral grounds alone. But I think if you just are looking at economies and practicalities of stopping a global pandemic, that's a good enough argument too. When it comes to the domestic situation, I think, you know, some of what's happening is vaccine hesitancy among some populations. And Dr. Ziller mentioned that is the case in rural areas. And we know that Americans in rural areas are more likely to be Republican. And there's actually like a pretty big partisan divide on, you know, willingness to be vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And that explains some of it, but it doesn't explain all of it. And so in rural areas, you have the access issues that Dr. Ziller mentioned, but you also have a kind of attitude about getting vaccinated. Rural Americans are more likely to see it as a personal choice than as part of their responsibility to protect others in the community. They're less likely to feel like they're being affected. They're more likely to think concerns are overblown. So some of these issues can be perhaps addressed with more education around this issue. So in this case, it's not just a persuasion scenario. So like a lot, you know, it's actually also like combating misinformation and educating people. You know, even in the state of Maine, when we look at race, we have an issue with people of color or black Mainers not being vaccinated at the same level percentage in terms of their percentage of the population as white Mainers. Now, we don't have great data on that. Something up to 40% of the people who have been vaccinated in Maine have not stated their race or ethnicity, so we really don't have good data on it. But, it's the bit of data that we have is concerning, and we want to make sure that that doesn't persist because, as we know, Maine is one of the states where there has been a disproportionate impact on Mainers of color of this disease. So what are some of the things? You know, we've talked about nationally the legacy of mistrust, for example, that black Americans can feel towards the healthcare, you know, system kind of as a monolith. So if you look at, you know, surveys and polls, they're less likely to trust Dr. Fauci than white Americans. Dr. Anthony Fauci, you know, our celebrated epidemiologist. But they're very likely to trust their local healthcare providers. So that suggests that the way to target that population isn't by pumping in national messages, but actually working with local providers where their trust is there to help them access and feel comfortable accessing the vaccine. We also have people that are concerned about, I mean, there are some things flying around online, like hoax stuff, like that people's DNA will be impacted or that there'll be a chip implanted and they'll be, you know, traced if they get the vaccine. And that disproportionately affects people with lower education, which tends to be people who are poorer. So, you know, this all goes into the importance of not just a persuasion campaign, but a campaign to provide the right information and in the right languages and in the right places so that people can actually be informed and make an informed decision.
Right. Well, so many issues there. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from New England Naturopathic Health, committed to treating the underlying causes of chronic disease. NaturopathicME.com. And by Breakwater in Portland, inviting you to learn more about their day school and enrichment center. BreakwaterLearning.org.
I'm Tanya Mosley. The music you're hearing is the debut album of a baby girl created by her parents before she was even born. The album Sounds of the Unborn. That's next time on Here and Now.
Stay with us this morning, Here and Now, upcoming at the top of the hour, 12 noon today, here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is pleased to be a media sponsor of the Bangor Symphony Orchestra's Digital Masterworks 1, Bach to Block. Join conductor Lucas Richmond for a moving program of three works never before performed by the BSO, including Bach's Piano Concerto in D minor. The Bangor Symphony Orchestra's Masterworks 1 is a pre-produced concert available to the public to enjoy online now through March 13th. For tickets and complete details, please visit mainepublic.org and click on events.
Welcome back. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on our program, the many ethical questions that arise when it comes to vaccines and what those questions say about the values of American society. My guests are Jessica Miller, UMaine philosophy professor, and Dr. Jim Jarvis, physician in charge of vaccine distribution at Northern Light Health. Join our conversation, call 1-800-399-3566, send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'm going to go now to Dan calling from Lovell. Hi, Dan. What did you want to talk about?
I just had a quick question, actually targeted toward Dr. Jarvis. Mm-hmm. I made an appointment for my son. He was born with a congenital heart defect. So I had to say that he was over 75 in order to get the appointment for Bangor for his vaccination, because I didn't see anywhere on the form where I was able to select that he had one of the pre-existing conditions that are covered by this phase. So I'm a little bit worried about that, to be frank with you, and I was just wondering if I could get some feedback on that, if possible, please.
Yeah, so my initial feedback is that currently the state of Maine is only vaccinating individuals over the age of 70 and not individuals with chronic conditions. And so I respectfully ask that you actually cancel that appointment because at the screening process, you may get turned away once we realize that they do not meet the current criteria. And so the current criteria for the state of Maine is age over 70, except for healthcare workers and other first responders and essential workers the governor has designated.
Okay, no, thank you for that. It seemed to me, based upon what I'd seen, again, I'm not looking to be argumentative, obviously, that it was that people with underlying conditions, so maybe it was just a messaging issue with regards to the which phase of the vaccines we're in?
Yeah, so actually the Maine CDC's website was a little bit confusing, and we did reach out to them, and I'm happy to say that they did correct that on their page, that it now specifically states under who they're vaccinating in phase 1B. They had given a timeline to kind of give people the so that they knew where they might fall in, and when people saw the timeline, it was a little bit vague, and so now it's clearer today than it was just yesterday. So we understand that, and we sympathize with individuals who may have had that miscommunication, but right now the state is only vaccinating those over the age of 70. We do expect that there'll be an expansion of that as we vaccinate more of our individuals over the age of 70, and then can move on to another phase, which I expect will be people over the age of 65 as the next phase. But again, that's my own speculation. I don't speak for the Maine CDC or Northern Light Health when I make that opinion.
No, I completely understand. No, thank you for that clarification. I was somewhat concerned because I don't particularly take kindly to, not putting the truth down on the paperwork. So I appreciate
it. Understood. But that is the reason why on our website it actually asks for your birth date, and that's a required field in order to make sure that we are vaccinating following along the Maine CDC's guidelines and what the governor has specifically stated to us.
Thank you, Dan, for calling and for your honesty. And Dr. Jarvis, that does bring up another question as far as people with different risk factors and saying, well, how come this combination of medical conditions takes priority over another one? And there's judgment there as far as smokers, for example, being prioritized when people say, well, they don't deserve it because they smoke. And so how are those kinds of conditions judged in these cases?
Yeah, so that again becomes one of the things that the state of Maine has tried to eliminate and to minimize as much as possible versus what we've seen in other states where, frankly, they have chaos now because either it's a judgment call or it's pitting one person or one group against another one. That same concept of I'm sicker than you are, so I deserve this more than you. And that's what I think Maine has done an excellent job of preventing. While it is hard personally for people, and I have some personal reasons why I have some individuals that I would like to see vaccinated now, but I have to put those aside to look at that population and what we can do from a benefit standpoint for the most good. And so when we look around at other states that have said you need to have this many chronic conditions in order to get vaccinated, what we found is people are starting to say, well, I want to have a more chronic condition, so can you say that I have another chronic condition so I can meet the list? And that's not really what we're all about. We really want people to be as healthy as possible and not competing for the bottom of the barrel, but rather competing for the top. And so it becomes a difficult situation. It makes people in competition with one another, and the state of Maine has tried to eliminate that, and that's why the age-based thing makes both good sense from a scientific standpoint. Again, those are the people at most risk for severe disease and death from COVID-19, but also operationally, it makes it so that we're not seeing that. New Hampshire, for instance, requires now that you have a doctor's note in order to get vaccinated, stating that you have X number of chronic conditions. Well, what that does is put yet another barrier to getting the vaccine. You now have to go to your doctor's office, get that letter, and then you can register, and then you can wait online, and then you can get the vaccine. In Maine, we're not seeing that. We're seeing that people are able to find a mechanism to get scheduled for their appointment, coming in, getting seen, and eliminating yet one more barrier, because we know it's frustrating. There are a limited number of appointments, a limited number of vaccine, and therefore we're trying to mitigate that as much as possible.
Sure. Okay. Well, joining us now is Cliff Guthrie. He's faculty at Husson University. He teaches and writes in the fields of ethics, philosophy, and religion. Thanks for calling in, Cliff.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, Cindy.
And you take a more theological view on these questions. What are your thoughts on how we prioritize one group over another?
Yeah, thank you. I actually wouldn't say or characterize what I do as sort of coming from a theological point of view.
Philosophical.
As a philosophical one, sure. Going back to what Jessica was outlining, these kind of four overriding principles that are common to bioethics decisions that we have to make, it seems clear, for most folks, and I think for myself too, that utility or this most good principle would be the one that would come out on top as the most important when we think about distributing a limited good like vaccines. And all other things being equal would sort of be the guiding principle over justice or mitigating health inequities and transparency. But there are a couple of other views on how we might prioritize those values. If you look at, there were a number of high-level groups who were looking at these values all through 2020, anticipating this issue. The WHO had a group, and for them, global equity and also equity within the nation came out as a salient value, one that really they highlighted a lot. And there was a writer for the Hastings Center, Harold Schmidt, who argued that given the historic health inequalities particularly people of color and folks struggling with poverty, that equity issues ought to be foregrounded as the most important. And he even makes the kind of controversial statement, even at the risk of sort of diminishing the overall good. So there has been some interesting discussion about whether equity, and I think that's been mentioned here in this conversation too, whether equity might be more emphasized in the way we roll out our phases.
Sure. Well, I think that seems to be the theme that's come out today. So thank you very much for joining us. That was Cliff Guthrie, who teaches ethics, philosophy, and religion at Husson University. And we have a question here from an email from Libby, who says, when we move into the over 65 group, would it be more ethical to, at the very least on the honor system, ask those who are retired or working from home or who have the resources to continue minimizing their exposure to hold off on making appointments and let those who are working out in frontline jobs or otherwise vulnerable to go ahead for vaccination, especially given that those with higher exposure risk are likely to have less time to devote for calling and calling and calling to try to get appointments? Dr. Jarvis.
I was hoping you were going to ask Jessica that one.
Okay, we can. Jessica, you want to take that one?
And I'll just say, that's a tough question to ask. It really is, because then it relies on everybody to make that judgment about themselves, which is a difficult question and concern. every one of us has to be social in some way. We all still need to go grocery shopping. We still need to make doctor's appointments. So all of us are vulnerable in that regard, and it's hard to make that question about who's more vulnerable than others. So Jessica, I'm curious for your opinion.
Yes, I'll make you an honorary bioethicist, Jim. That's a great answer. No, I agree because, you know, I believe people have a moral duty to be vaccinated. We know these are safe vaccines, and we know they make a huge difference in terms of, you know, minimizing the harms of this pandemic. And I think it's very hard from your own house or apartment or living room to figure out where you should be in a massive population group of 65 and over. So I just don't see a mechanism for anything but making that confusing and potentially delaying everything. And plus, we don't know. Just because someone isn't working, they may have multi-generations living in their house. They may have a lot of exposure because they're, you know, doing other things. So I would say I'm with Jim on this and keeping it cleaner and simpler and getting vaccinated as soon as it's your turn.
Yeah, something
just
you just mentioned.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'll add to that if you look at the national data, you know, Maine does lead the way in vaccine that's been allocated to us, utilizing it and administering it within a 7-day period after it's been shipped to the state of Maine. So that simplified method, while it may seem like it's more strict or more restrictive, it's actually getting vaccine to more people. And so that's really an important point for us to understand, because once again, as Jessica so eloquently said, it is that idea that we have to vaccinate as many people as we can in order to protect the greater good and our entire population.
We only have about a minute left, but I'm going to slip in a quick question based on that. Is it ethical to mandate that somebody gets a vaccine for the public good?
It depends. So we have some legal precedent for mandating vaccines in public schools, daycares, hospitals, the military. I do not believe it is ethically justified right now, and we have such high rates of vaccine acceptance. But if we had a situation where the disease was rampant, inadequately contained, where we had an adequate supply, transparent communication, the right infrastructure, and we just could not get people to volunteer, then I think if we get to that point, which I do not foresee, then potentially a mandate, quote unquote, but how that's enforced, you know, would be. But I think the negatives are we don't want to increase distrust. We already have distrust of government, distrust of pharmaceutical companies. So it would really be a last resort. I think education and persuasion will go a lot farther.
Okay. Dr. Jarvis, did you want to add to that?
I would agree 100% with what Jessica said. So I don't have anything to add further than that.
Okay, lots of issues when it comes to vaccinations, and we didn't get to the many calls and questions we were hoping to get to, but thank you so much for both of you for joining us today. Dr. Jim Jarvis is with Northern Light Health. He's the physician leader for Incident Command, and he's director of clinical education. And Jessica Miller is philosophy professor at the University of Maine, and she's a clinical ethicist. Today's sound engineer was George Thomas. This program will be rebroadcast tonight at 7. Visit MaineCalling.org for more information about our programs and to sign up for our podcast. Tomorrow on the program, our tech team returns to answer your questions about all those devices and technology that are keeping us afloat during the pandemic. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.